Interesting.
Yeah. Okay, I'm trying to adapt a little bit to what you are interested in and what sort of combining it with my headache for. I have a very gross cough. It's a bit immersion. No, but honestly, I've been doing things for the past time. And when this invitation came, it was sort of put me in the awkward situation of trying to understand what the hell was this about, or what is it about that I've been trying to do. Half intentionally, half unintentionally, and what does it connect when you start something new that you want to do here? I mean, what is the possibility of doing something? What are your ambitions, etc.? What happened to all the effort and energy that was put in, that we put in, that everybody puts in this kind of project? So maybe I should start. This is sort of my or another angle or another perspective on the theme here. I have to switch these glasses, it's very strange. I have to switch the glasses, which so the art we're interested in, we claim what we are. Pretend that we're interested in arts and artists in universities. And looking at what we've been doing in, I would say, in Sweden, Denmark, Scandinavia, we are, when I say we, it's people who are have been interested or dissatisfied with the way in which a very important part of the higher education, you may deplore that or not, but at least a very important part when it comes to the number of students, that is the management and business education, how that has been, has developed. And the fact that actually when you take care of these students, this enormous amount of bachelor students and master students and whatever it is, that come to us with the hope, often justified, unfortunately, and that to get the job in the future. When you take care of them, can you, in any sense, introduce them to some kind of reflection on culture, on art, and not only on science? So, in a sense, it's not really the theme that you're working on here, Jens, and so on. But it's more. Because the science part has been reflected upon, I would say, in economics and in management, in a narrow sense. I mean, when they speak about science, they speak about applied science, they speak about patents, they speak about industrial development and innovation and this kind of discourse. So it happened in the beginning of the 90s that some of us thought that it would be interesting to expand it to something else, so a reflection that more went into the direction of humanities, what the Americans call liberal arts, and also kind of art practices. So I've tried to put together what has happened in my little world in these things. And let's start with the most recent event or milestone, or whatever you call it. In June, there was a report by the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Higher Education. So what is this, and why should I speak about that? The Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Higher Education regularly makes reports about the situation of higher education in America. In my field, they did reports 50 years ago, two reports came out 50 years ago, where actually this growing field of management studies, business schools, MBAs, you know, this kind of world, was addressed with the the urge to turn education into a more scientific kind of level, develop it in a more scientific way. At that time, 50 years ago, this kind of recommendation was, of course, immediately followed up by those who were in that direction, and I'm thinking of Herbert Simon, for instance, and the MIT, and the Carnegie Tech, and so on, Carnegie Mellon. And they jumped at that, and what has happened since is that business schools and management education, I would say, to make a long story short, try to motivate their presence in the educational system by being as scientific as possible, meaning the whole kind of science tradition of publishing, the citation tradition, the whole rat race kind of industry of publication and so on, that became really strong at that time, 50 years ago. So now suddenly appears a report which is part of this Carnegie investigation of professions in the US. Huh? So they are interested in various sorts of professions. They have done a report on lawyers, they've done a report on medicine, now they have made a report on business education, where they start by saying that business education is extremely important to them quantitatively. So many students go into business education, so lots of the student population actually go that way. Their problem is what the general underlying problem of this program of Carnegie Foundation, when they look at the education, is what is a profession? What is a profession today? How can you envisage what it is being professional? And when it comes to the management education, they observe and come to the conclusion that actually the corporate identity or the business identity is eroding because corporations are not, American corporations especially, are not globally dominating anymore. Behind you have a kind of feeling that something is going to happen, and something is happening in the world economy. The Chinese are coming and so on and so forth. So the old idea of business education being an education for corporations, for business and for capitalism, point, full stop, is not as simple as it might have seemed 50 years ago. Then a second point of departure, and this is sort of the opening for the interest in what we are interested in. So second point of departure is a criticism made by this report, by a narrow-minded kind of economism in the education, and the meaning basically that when they go out, and this is a very practical report, when they go out and interview teachers and students and look at programs, they realize that economic models are not looked upon as models, but by the students, especially the bachelor, young students, it's looked upon as reality. So they learn agency theory, not as a theory, but as, you know, as a description of man. And they look at financial models not as one possible way of constructing, engineering a model for finance, but as the way in which the industry operates. And we now come so far, also we thought we talked about that at, or I did at least, at the breakfast table. And we come so far that we have the STS people, Social Studies of Technology, that are into studying carefully how the theoretical world has come to be the blueprint for the designs of the real world. I mean, you construct financial bourses and stock exchanges and derivatives and instruments using theory, so the theories are materialized. Now this is a complication, of course. It becomes when you are in the midst of a big financial crisis, when you are, as actually one of my colleagues teaching business ethics at Stern School, and now he's very busy occupying the NYU because he occupied So this kind of, in a sensitive way, I mean, this report takes care of this and tries to tackle it in some way. One of the conclusions is that you have to get some sort of education in practical reasoning, whereby you combine analytical thinking and analytical models with what they call multi-frame models and reflection, which is a way of putting it, which would be more the authors were actually following their education and the level of, because we've been in touch with them, with the reflection they all have themselves, they would have jumped into a discussion about hermeneutics, probably about many things. But this is a political kind of book. Therefore, it's important because it opens up, it says that you have to include some sort of humanities, you have to open up to some sort of liberal arts in this huge industry of education. So, of course, having been into this kind of thinking, perhaps, probably for some time, we were very enthusiastic when we saw this. We just arranged a conference on that, and the proceedings are going to come out, where the US and the Europe, what's happening in Europe, and the US is sort of confronting to discuss these things. America, sort of, or the American business school world, realizes this. Okay. So this is something that has to do with, I think, our theme. So what is my history when it comes to this? When, for instance, going back then, 2009, I was at 8-9, posts were created at Copenhagen Business School, but other places too, hiring faculty with a background in aesthetics, humanities, to teach management, and not necessarily, you know, to do what they can to contribute and so on. But precursor to that, because what the Americans found out was, of course, that things have been going on here in Europe, which they have not really sort of taken notice of carefully. We have in Germany an old tradition, for you to understand the place, this kind of thinking, you have to think about Wittgen Herdecker, you have to think about Zeppelin, you have to think about all these private or non-traditional, at least, state, non-totally state-financed universities that have been created here. And also the Wittgen Herdecker thing is interesting because it goes back to the anthroposophical kind of ideas which are looming behind in the backstage, and it also points to the philosophical background of the anthroposophical movement, which is also specific. Anyway, so posts are created, jobs are created, and programs are created in business school context. Huh? So what more, if I go back again, have we been doing, my colleagues in Sweden basically, and Scandinavia also? Well, I would say that around 2005 there was not an explosion, but a presentation of surfacing of result of a long work in form of autoethnographic PhDs, practice-based PhDs, but the autoethnography came in handy in order to fit to what they have been doing, telling their story about how do you work as an artist, what is your experience as an artist, and these are sort of publications, books, products that come out, and including, of course, the possibility for these people to get integrated in the university environment, and not necessarily in art school in my case, but in more Betriebswirtschaftslehre. Then there's a series of experiments, very nice experiments, but I wonder what I've been doing. So going back 2006, around about, we started a nomadic university. We felt that if we're going to study these interactions between art aesthetics and management, called economics, economic development, regional development, etc., we have to tour around. We have to. We, 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 we can't do it inside our own bricks, we have to tool. Okay, we've got money to do that, and I'll show you that. And going even further back, we profited by this nice concept of creative industries, cultural industries, whatever. And the Swedish National Bank knocked on our door and said, oh, this is very, what's going on, and can you do a project? So we did a project that resulted in 13 PhDs, which part of them was these autoethnographic PhDs. So we're doing that. And when I say we, it was a consortium, you can say, of Stockholm School of Economics, Stockholm University, and the KTH, the Polytechnique in Stockholm. Going back even more, and that is getting more and more private, or you know, my own little experience, my own little life. The product vision thing, we had, we used this money to arrange shows to bring people together. We had a show in 2001 with Artworks Consulting. And where we got in touch with Pistoletto, with Michelangelo Pistoletto, who jumped on, and so we have been cooperating with him and his center. And this, in a sense, also resulted in something called the Produktvision, which was a show that was done in the Kulturgraden, I think it's now Kunstgraden. Which was a strange event, I speak. And finally, in 1994...
Flutgraf.
Flutgraf. Flutgraf. It's on the...
border between Treptow and Kreuzberg. Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It still exists, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have a residency program there still.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that Marie Bauer is still involved.
He's not.
I don't think so.
No, he's probably not. But he's in the house. Was once you remember, I think he was a year ago. So the question is then, starting out with this rethinking undergraduate business education, and then I have old boys, because when I was invited to the inauguration of the Betriebswirtschaftliche Fakultät in Wittenherdecke, that was Joseph Beuys had deceased. He was on the list as being an adjunct professor of the faculty. He was invited by Professor Eckhard Kappler, who was a Gründungsdekan, later moved on to Innsbruck. And of course he couldn't come because he was dead, but that didn't matter because his reincarnation was there. And that was Johannes Stuttke. It was really... So there was... this Boysian, anthroposophical, Steinerian, mishmash, saladrus, this kind of living theme park of German transcendental philosophy is fantastic, and it works, it's great. And when you come from the periphery of Europe and you've vaguely read these things, and you can go there, it's like, you know, seeing the stuff alive, reading it, incredible. And these gentlemen of the Anthroposophical Society in the Ruhrgebiet, and I'll never forget them, very elegant gentlemen, sort of, and ladies, men in suits, drinking the opening reception cocktail from clay mugs. Well, Steiner Schulen, it's a special chapter in Germany. Yeah? Okay, so this was. In that thing, things. Yeah. One important person there was, of course, Michael Bockemühl. Okay. So the aesthetics management. So what's going on? In CBA, the question is, how does this sort of permeate the university structure? What happens? And bricks again. We have a house. This is our house. And there is a studio, yes, a studio. And we want, I think we need lots of ideas for this studio. But we also, what we're doing now with this house that has been around for a couple of years and has passed through. And is it a failure? Is it not? I mean, the house was bought to be a kind of center for innovation. The rector changed, and we were on the verge of selling it. They were on the verge of selling it because it's lots of money. And people moved in, and the first guy moved in, I mean, the practical problems maybe, first guy moved in, immediately used half the budget for buying office furniture. That was, you know, complete. And people came there with a dream of having their, you know, their loft or their rough, being arty-farty, and they saw this office. So that took so 1 year to throw him out and the office furniture without him losing the face and the time, and, you know, that's how it usually is. Huh? So how it is. Very advanced. I didn't intend it to be so advanced. That's strange. Anyway. End show. Stop the show. This is, we can use it that way. This is another, what is happening? Well, this table is in Genf. Genève. And around the table sit people. That was 2009. Sits Michelangelo, who's just been he's been talking about money systems. It was a fascinating evening because he had a lecture in this private foundation that is run by a good friend of mine, well connected to the private banking sector in Genève. And Michelangelo came and talked about his utopian ideas. I mean, if you know utopian ideas on money, you will recognize very much what he was saying. And there was an intense discussion. We had problems getting out of that because the bankers were sitting a very long time discussing together with him. And this was very, how do you spread this? This is a philosopher from Copenhagen, a kind of phenomenologist philosopher. over there is a guy from who was at the time in Lisboa, who has been all around, was an American, been doing studio work in Lisbon, and now moved to Copenhagen. We hired him, and he's more or less in charge of this house. Next to him, the Foucauldian expert of Denmark, a philosopher who is now running a huge program on the future of the humanities. There are two programs going on like that, one in Denmark, in Scandinavia, one in Denmark, and one in Sweden, trying to understand the future of humanities. And this coinciding with the Carnegie report makes it so. And all these people are sort of connected to Denmark. The Norwegian textbook in management, Kunst och Kapital, Ny förbindelse mellan kunst, estetik och näringsliv.
What's näringsliv?
Näringsliv! The Norwegians are very optimistic language. Wirtschaftsliv. So what has happened during the past 5 6 years? There are regular conferences, another one coming up next year in York, on criticism and aesthetics, the art of management, and all that. What the hell goes on there? People actually, faculty from business schools come there and talk about these things, and meet people from art faculties, artists and so on. There is a kind of big encounter. Probably many of you would think it was terribly naive, but it sort of starts. Some is naive, some is not. There are platforms for these things. There are tracks in the big management conferences, that's probably in the big scientific conferences, I imagine. Tracks on art and aesthetics in the American Academy of Management, a nice little conference of 15,000 job-seeking management professors meeting to get better contracts and present their papers and, you know, get tenure and all that kind of stuff. But there are also tracks on that. There are tracks on the organizational organization theory conferences, and it's kind of sociological economic conferences like EGOS, etc., etc. If you are interested in this, and there are not only tracks, there are for this kind of world it's important, there are sort of standing working groups, meaning that you can plan your career, you know each year, during 5 years, you can come and present papers, meet colleagues, develop ideas, network, and so on. There are, of course, publications in this was one a journal that unfortunately doesn't exist anymore, sort of infused into this kind of conference called Stasis, and so on. So this is the world of management teaching and management education is opening to this. Okay. Then you have the autoethnography of the practice-based PhD. And these are not only books that nobody reads. These are, of course, books with people behind that get the possibility to teach and to get, you know, like, I think all avant-garde artists know that the first thing to do is to get a teaching job. So they get a teaching job. They can get a teaching job. And this guy, for instance, wrote a very interesting thing on a testimony on his career during the IT boom. And the book is called, I don't know if you could see that, but the book is called The Invisible Foot. Because he didn't experience the invisible hand of Adam Smith, but he was kicked out all the time. And it's to understand why we are kicked out. And here you have a chap who was at the École des Mines. And I mean, there could be a various sorts, a various kind of interest, but this one is a more theoretically kind of motivated work based on Nelson Goodman and the impossibility of getting into some kind of exchange relation with clients. These were clients for garden architecture, and in order to have to develop, to make this kind of partnership and develop some kind of collection, you have to develop a language, a specific language, and you have to stay away from the traditional management kind of skills because they destroy this, because you have to develop something else. And by combining an intelligent empirical work with Nelson Goodman, something interesting came out of that based on practice. And this is someone which is actually living in Hamburg. Armin Schodzinski, and he did not want to do it on his own experience, on his own art. He's doing work on that next door here, but he was taken care of by Dagmar Aisha, who was a curator, who is a curator in Zurich, but at the time professor human geography. And she's sort of, because there is always, I mean, the tricky thing with this is to get these guys to make a thesis. I mean, in my academic environment, they have to have a shine, they have to have a diploma, because otherwise you cannot accept them. Or you have to arrange and negotiate. It takes long time. First of all, to convince them that it's worthwhile doing this, and then to get them into the system. And in my world, there are no clear routes into the system. Maybe it's in yours, but not in mine. Then we suddenly, how does it work? I mean, what grant does you have a grant now from the EU? We run into a Finnish foundation, which was a Finnish Swedish speaking foundation, and they provided us with money. So that we could actually invite. So we tried to to go out and visit sites, excursions, geographic kind of methodology, pedagogy, to visit sites where something interesting was happening. And those who visited were the nomads going around, and we went to these oases, and there were like 3 year organized hell work. My God, this is really. But it was fun, of course. But after 3 years, you're completely burnt out. So good luck. That's, but I mean, you have meaning that probably because you do this as half an amateur, so you don't can't rest on you know standard procedures of being professionals. You have to go there. You have to find the places. You have to find. You have to make the seminars possible in art spaces, and art spaces are strangely enough usually worthless seminar rooms because they have so bad acoustics. I'm talking very practical, very bad. So you don't hear what people say, and you have to invite people and see if they're not if they're coming, and you know, and especially having each place is hosted by. If possible, a community of artists opening up, helping them, financing them, and so on.
So who was Pierre? Who was traveling?
Yeah,
in
was,
the
we wanted a group with PhD students, with artists, and with business people. So
all affiliated with the school or completely independent?
They were the PhD students were affiliated to my school at the time, which was Stockholm University, and the Finnish school at the time, which was Åbo Academy, Swedish speaking university in Finland. The artists were, you know, contacts. I mean, we tried to spread the word and see if it would come. And when you do this kind of thing, it's also very, very difficult because you have to make sure that everyone can afford coming, so we need a grant to do this. The business people can go in like the culture and tourism and so on. But it's also difficult to get business people to come and do this.
Mm.
Very difficult. So we didn't ended up with 33, but we have maybe 20% business people and the rest a mix of PhDs. Also difficult because
how many in total?
Huh?
How many people were traveling in total?
Like around between 20 and 30.
And over the periods, over the 3 years, was it mostly the same people on total change
it was.
Fluctuation?
We had wished to. We thought of a caravan. You know, sort of dream. We wanted a caravan. We started somewhere. And then people should join us. And we should drag them on.
Mm.
Bigger and bigger and bigger. It didn't work really. So some of them came, and we also saw too that the people we met at the different races, if we met someone really interesting, we tried to find finance to bring them on next time, and all the hosts to thank them by sort of giving them this kind of invitation for all the work that they've done and stuff like that. So we were between 20 and 30.
Mm-hmm.
And what did we do? Well, actually, the first way is to see a guy there who is now sleeping, I imagine. Timon Beyes was part. And this was in... this was in... we started in Åbo, Turku, in Finland, as it was funded, I think. And what we are carrying, what they are carrying there, is a table by Michelangelo Pistoletto, who gave us a table on the Baltic Sea, doing sea tapes, Mediterranean, and he sent us, so we went down and brought up this table, and it was well connected. So what you have Timon, the guy in the white shirt, is Paolo, who is one of the managers of Città d'Arte in Biella, and so on. So that was Åbo. We went on to Biella, and had a very interesting session down there. So what does this bring? I mean, if you do this, what could it? What is the result of a thing like that? Is it art tourism or what's going on? Well, probably part of it is. But for instance, this oasis was connected to Michelangelo's interest and actually investment. It is his house, which is an old textile factory, and his attempt to connect his center to the local to the local industry, that is, remains. Biela was doing was, I mean, British textiles were outsourced to Italy, and then Italy outsourced to China. So it's Chinese discussion is going on. There are a couple of factories, high-tech factories. Zegna, Ceruti, so that Michelangelo is trying to put. So what, when we came there, it created some sort of a forum where these textile people came in. We went to the textile university, and strangely enough, it's gone good. Actually, Biela Stallarte made a couple of new contacts thanks to this group of white people going around. Because the next door, imagine next door, you have probably a factory that is not even aware that you have a university here, and they're not very interested. You should take the boomerang effect. So that was Biela. And then we went to a tricky place called Kassel. Tricky for us. Because we were facing, we spoke about Catherine David, but this was Bergen. He had just been one of our sources to his favorite trick, which was obviously to be extremely arrogant to industry, to sponsors, and one story was that after long discussions with a potential sponsor, Monsieur Werving was invited with his group to come and visit the sponsor in question, who was dressed in all the commentator. And what he did there was just to quote from Bjerga. So out went Monsieur Bergen, and that. So we were coming there, and it was extremely interesting to try to come there and say, we come from a management school. He said, yes, that's very good, we can organize a cocktail for you, we can sell, and it will cost you 50,000 euro. Oh. But you know, it was so unprofessional and so childish and so stupid and so unintelligent. It was amazing. So we went there, we found a little nebenbei Kneipe. We went in, we found nice people, worked with them, and this is an Ford writer, the man who's standing there, who made a tool for us in the old weapons industry and the background of Cassie and all that kind of stuff. But it's interesting to see how these curators operate. I don't know what Mr. Berg is doing now, but good luck to him.
I'm the director of the museum.
Which one?
In Zurich.
Ah,
and
the Kunsthaus?
No, new one.
No.
Which will be open next year.
Good.
And I'm certain I'm just running the Biennale of Wuhan, or Korea.
South Korea. North Korea.
We have three projects with him. Yeah.
No. But I mean, this, he was not. He delegated this to a poor lady who was sort of part of the, who just came out of school, you know, and it was. Yeah. Anyway, but it was an extremely interesting thing, especially with our we spent a lot of time with the document archive, which is very interesting. Mm. So it was.
But Pierre, can I just to get to open up a little bit, I don't know whether you want to.
No, I don't want to.
No, because for me, this is an interesting example of, you know, because a lot of the time we speak about, for instance, the business or economic sciences as that other side which somehow has to be convinced or talked into. An interest in the arts, and here is an example which seems to be not so totally unusual of people in that world being genuinely interested in the arts, and then there's no easy language and leveling field where that encounter can take place, because there are all these prejudices. Probably,
yeah,
or maybe from both sides.
I think not only prejudice, it's I think the problem with the documenta was, I was working there at the time, was really that the character of the Documenta has changed so much in the last 10 years or so, that with regard to economic interests being connected, I mean, Documenta had 700,000 visitors, and it is an enormous business with regard to how do you call this, the bags you can buy and all this kind of stuff, merchandise, and also all the companies from all over Germany come there with groups and have their little events there with champagne, and I think this I think it's, I don't want to excuse Birgit's behavior, which is,
well, we were looked upon that as that.
Yeah, yeah, but I think sometimes it's, I think it's an interesting example actually. So it was on his part impossible to realize the kind of different nature of your, the interest of your group, it seems to me, somehow.
No, we're not. But it's, of course, it's a big, and how do you...
Yeah, do you know that he studied economics?
Economics, not management.
Economics, what's your
job?
He's an economist. Okay. Economist, huh? So. Well, I was an apple.
No, not sure. But when you want to do a study tour, sometimes we didn't succeed there really, but the interesting thing is to get some kind of dialogue going with the local, and that was very difficult to get, of course. We got it, but we got it on the regional kind of level.
Right.
That was fine.
Yeah, that's more interesting. I come from Kassel, and I was born there, and I think the history of the Documenta as a kind of spaceship in this town is so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is kind of, it has carnivalesque qualities somehow, sometimes. So.
And the industry tours we made.
Excuse me?
The industry tours when we saw the Panzer kind of weapons industry.
Mm-hmm.
The weapons industry. Mm-hmm. And that was, of course, extremely interesting.
Yeah.
So we got a knife, we had a history. Couldn't sort of mention it this kind of, because that sort of encounter was actually only in Documenta. We never got it in the Biennale,
mm-hmm.
in Venice.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly didn't get it in the next stop, which was Ljubljana, where we were taken care of by Irvin. Irvin group, Miranova, Fogelnick, and and the whole bunch of guys came, and we had the Leibach conference, Leibach discussion, which was so trying to understand the shift from the old the old regime to the new ones, and also clashes with meeting young artists from Ljubljana, and the tension between the young artists in Ljubljana and the Irving group, it was just sniffing on the surface, but we really had a fantastic
What are the kinds of questions that you bring to those meetings? Because, you know, I would imagine that the interest from the business community in art and aesthetics, I don't have a picture of what is being talked about in those conference panels, but you know, my fantasy would be that they look upon it very much as examples of certain structures. So really being interested in the arts more as a model rather than in the artworks in and of themselves. Do you get that?
What sort of happened, and we liked very much to happen. I mean, Biela is a good example of that. For instance, if you take your artist in residence and you go out to Kassel or Braunschweig or to Stockholm or to Copenhagen, and you are taking hosted by the group, the local group, they will, and we provided them with some money, of course, to, they shouldn't take a cost to that because you're paying for everything. And they're organizing a meeting. They're going to put you, to use you, to put you in a context, to build a context, to discuss things. And that is interesting. And the reflection is not completely done yet. What kind of issues were brought up when we came there? What was spoken of? In Ljubljana, there was suddenly they brought in a whole bunch of people, because they've been doing this kind of survey of what's happening to the arts after the war. There was guys from Petersburg coming down and they staged a whole conference where we were not the centerpiece of that, but we were sort of the reason for doing this conference. And we had really tough clashes between activists from Petersburg and looking at what we were doing. So it's like an experiment, a local experiment of time. You introduce some kind of instrument or group of nomads walking into it. And how are we taking care of it? What? And sometimes we were not. I mean, that was probably why we think that the document, we were not, we treated as clients as consumers. And of course, it's better to be abused or misused or used or a pretext for something. Huh? So that was the idea of the study tour, so to speak. But of course, there were sort of surface topics you could start with, presentation of institutions, presentation of history, of the artist group. You begin with that and then comes up.
I just, if this is misplaced, because it's maybe more general discussion, but I was just thinking about the different sorts of relationships between thinkers from the business community and the artists, and I was thinking of some of the things we've been doing in the UK over the last 5 years under this horrifically named Digital Economy Programme, which has all these strands of funding. One of them is called Connected Communities, and when I was up at Culture Lab in Newcastle, there was a big Connected Communities consortium which was across the country, and it involved artists. There were artists in Culture Lab, there were artists, Blast Theory was still sort of associated with Nottingham. But we also had a guy called Ted Fuller, who's head of the Lincoln Business School, and he's editor of the Futures magazine, and a woman called Lorraine Warren, who's remained a very close collaborator. She's a complexity specialist in organisational management and innovation from Southampton. And the kinds of relationships that we were able to broker was when we had workshops which were to do with not tool development per se, but trying to build up new kinds of collaborative models across different disciplines with arts at the core, then somebody like Lorraine or Ted or both would come in and would moderate at specific points in the workshop a discussion to try and articulate notions of values that were moving across the different cohorts. And this is where you're valued by whom, for whom, what kind of output, is it processual, is it marketable, the time windows thing. And I found that we were lucky. We were working with very sensitive and intelligent people. But the wonderful thing was that they taught us, coming from the outside. I'm not an artist, I'm more of a theorist. But the artists who were part of the group actually acquired confidence in being able to articulate their own values much more incisively than they'd been able to do before. And I just... Sorry, it may not be quite relevant to what you're talking about, but I think it comes back to some of your earlier questions about how the business thinking and the management community can find linkages across to the arts. Does that make any sense to you, Pierre?
Oh, yes, I'm sure it does, but it's very, very difficult.
It is, yeah.
Because what you have with the... but when I look back on it, how did we put together? Was it a good way to do it? That's another thing. But how did we do? We were in a hurry. We got a grant. Do you recognize that?
Yeah.
we had like 2 months to go, no?
Oh, gosh.
And the first thing has to get job started, huh? So what do? You open your address book. You speak to your friends.
Yes.
And that's how you put together.
Yeah.
And I had also in memory at that time an experience of starting a very sort of, at that time, hot, not completely forgotten, kind of creative economy course for the cultural and the art and the business sector in Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the same problem there, finding people from business.
Mm.
From the art sector, the theatres in that case, no direct problem, but it's very difficult to get them to devote time to this.
Yeah.
Very difficult.
But I think once one begins to identify vectors, individuals, engaged, intelligent individuals, then there is a critical mass that you very slowly build up. I know it's a slow process, but also I'm very concerned at times that there is the assumption that the business people are reluctant and that the artists are all eager. The artists are often eager, but for all the wrong reasons. Because often you'll find that artists are looking for quick wins. They want the business community to tell them how overnight they're going to swing things around.
Like documenta,
yeah. So I think identifying the right people happens right across the board. Mm-hmm. But
No, of course.
About artistic practice in your studio, I mean, is there any attempt to integrate economic-based artistic research? I mean, there are artists that are really very much interested in the function of economy and alternative ways of finding economy, paperless or moneyless economy, and art projects around this theme. I mean, is there a kind of attempt to get them in and to benefit of this kind of skills of alternative economic forms?
Yeah, I mean, we would like to do that in the future. We tried to do it before too, but also it's having an artist in residence, which we have had, has been in the. This depends which university, and this CBS structure is tricky in that sense that it's difficult to find a place for an artist on a long term basis. For one shot things, it's possible to do, but a place for them. How do you have a sustainable, we probably call it, relationship with the organization?
But why did you want a sustainable relationship with people?
Because in the case I'm thinking of, I would have loved to see the artist produce a PhD, getting a document and being able to use that in the future for himself.
Yeah, but if that desire is in the way of creating an interesting art program, maybe you should kind of drop that part of it and get an interesting curator in and develop a program around a theme like the one that is proposing.
Sure, sure. And this, yes.
Because, I mean, you know, if you look at the history of the Kunstraum here, there's a certain sustainability, of course, through the people here at the university who are involved, then through relations with artists who are involved in different projects. But then there's also sustainability through the kinds of projects and the kinds of questions that the Kunstraum has been asking over the years. So it's very much also the continuity is a projection of the string of projects that from my perspective are quite obviously interconnected, even though they are individual projects that have their own lifespan.
I think that's very valid, of course, and I think at the same time the other form of sustainability that corresponds to an individual
being a point of contact and a point of negotiation over time is also extremely valuable, and it's the source of another kind of dynamic. I'm thinking of somebody we had in Culture Lab. Fortunately, she already had her PhD. She'd got that one out of her system before she arrived. Well, she was finishing when she arrived. But she's an artist who works on Bluetooth systems, and she's actually a ceramics artist. And because we put her in an incredibly interdisciplinary environment with computer scientists and electronics people and so on, she was developing Bluetooth artifacts for communication, Bluetooth jewelry for communication between individuals. And because of the nature of this place that I built up, I put her in touch with the gerontology sector in Newcastle, which is shortest life history in the UK, but biggest gerontology research division. And so she started to develop Bluetooth jewelry for people with memory disorders, intergenerational contact. And suddenly there was a whole context which had business ramifications potentially, which had all kinds of social, a lot of the social scientists in Newcastle became incredibly interested. But at no point, no, that's a lie, but...
You didn't say it.
Okay. I nearly said it. There were points where she felt that the artistic integrity and energies were being too channeled by some of the some of the applications take up the stories that the university needed to tell. But overall, I think because of the exposure of an individual who had a lot of potential linkages, offered a lot of potential linkages to different parts of the university community, that was something that could only be instituted over time. So I think there are arguments for both cases.
Yeah.
There's the continuity represented by a curatorial strand, and there's the
How long did this trajectory take?
Well, she's still there. She's still in Culture Lab. So that she arrived 2007. I don't know how long. I think she's still there. I must look it up. But she's been riding across different projects. And of course, the trouble is that when you're riding across different funded projects, you do have to comply with the deadlines and the deliverables of the different funding frameworks. But the interesting thing about them is that they've come from very diverse areas. So it's given. She is a learning lesson for everybody else. I think we should put her on a throne.
That's probably a problem I have personally. It's probably my problem. I'm getting very sort of the idea of why I started with this thing was to transform the curriculum of management and business. Because I saw that this is not a place for me. I understood that it was also not a curriculum that was interesting for very many students, actually, and not even for the development of the economy or the development of so I wanted to change it. So the thing is, how much of this trickles down into the structure, how much of this makes, is sustainable. And I've been thinking of that the whole night. What happened to these things? And these are events. Your construct, for instance, it's so fascinating when you look at it. But one of our doctoral students said a critical strategy seminar at our department, you're only doing add-ons all the time. Right? New project, adding to all the time to things. So new things are coming in, extra money is coming in.
We always have new students.
Huh?
Each semester you have new
students. Sure.
Same project.
No. But what's we have a very dramatic kind of effect of that, which I'm struggling with as head of department for the moment, is that we had a fantastic add-on like 5 years ago, a big project came in, and people were euphoric, and now the project is over, and there are no fixed positions for not even half of these guys, so people are extremely depressed.
Yeah.
So from... And I'm not saying that one can employ anyone that comes, but what? Yeah.
This was not our idea. We have. Excuse me.
Yeah.
It's okay, it's fine.
Nee, mach mal.
We have always changing curators and changing artists. That's how the art world functions. It's very mobile. And there are some people based in the university and with everybody else.
You have a tenured position, right? I have a tenured position.
Yes, I know.
I don't.
Another aspect for continuity is the animals. We didn't talk about that. What does it mean to run an avant-garde art program at the university? Yeah? The anti-intellectual tendencies, the tendency which don't like it from a political point of view, so that was a part of our history, common history.
Mm-hmm.
The attempts to abolish this. Yes? We had to do very much to do that is not abolish this program in university by some of our colleagues. Yeah?
Mm.
But that's also a base for continuity because it makes you stronger, motivates.
Dort gab es eine Wortmeldung dann, Frau Gastler.
I wanted just to bring up one project to the table that I participated in and worked for, the Division of the Earth by Dirk Schmidt. And I get in contact with he in the seminar in my second semester, and it took me my whole study nearly to participate in the seminar. It was years that he had the opportunity to work here with Kunstform on his project that he began before and that continues. Mm-hmm. And it was presented, for example, in Salzburg at the Kunstverein or in at Documenta 12. Yeah, but he has a publication now where he can tell us many things about what he did in this project, but it's at a point that he did this publication when he said, okay, now it's fine. I got all these themes I wanted into my publication. It's not a PhD, but it really... that was a project, I guess, where it's good that the artist has his contact and did his things out of our institution, but still has a teaching possibility here and get some funding and just for a living also. Yes.
But it's a project of the past of our old programs. It would not be possible anymore. It's also a problem.
Yeah.
Since we have changed the MA, it was the old magister,
mm-hmm.
and we could do it like at an art school, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
as long as we like, but it's not possible anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's mm-hmm. possible for one semester or for the most for two semesters to do a project.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards you have to do a new project.
Because
it's part of the philosophy of the study program.
Bologna.
Mm-hmm.
Not Bologna.
No, it's Leuphana.
It's only Bologna because it's BAMA. But you know, in Germany, Bologna is different from from UK or some of France even. It's completely bureaucratic. Yeah? It's completely predefined, like in school. Yeah, we have partly to behave like school teachers.
And
that's a special German implementation. I think it's also bound because this whole program is, first of all, a program to... how do economists say efficiency problem? Yeah? To cut costs. Yeah? There's a big rhetoric around it, not especially at our university, but the whole Bologna process is a big rhetoric for saving money. Yeah? And you don't have these freedoms anymore to do a project over three semesters. Yeah? That's not efficient too much. Efficient anymore. That's the problem here. But we can deal with it. Yeah? But insofar it is an atypical project, yeah.
And you have like a 6-semester bachelor. You first do your Leuphana semester where you don't really study what you study. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And then in your last semester you write your thesis. And then you go to the world in the middle. So when do you do your project that is like years?
Well, this is the real discussion that how it goes on.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm introducing this, and there's a finance professor saying, as we mentioned yesterday, say, no, I need all these hours for people to understand the algorithm, or otherwise you can't take this out.
Mm-hmm. The problem is this kind of module structure. You have one module, which is called, which we defined ourselves, project module.
Mm-hmm.
This module is for one semester.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't be for more, because then the art historian says, I can't teach historical art anymore, because you are doing projects all the time. So there's place for one project.
From Castellan.
Centers like that around here, but it's interesting. In the sense that what they are doing is, what Michelangelo is doing is using, is selling one or two pieces in order to finance his academy, because he likes to have students around, he likes to have disciples around. And these disciples, he's parachuting them in different projects in the local industry. So you go to you want to, you go and do a project in Ceruti or in Zenia or with Bagasella or something like that around. And you can do this project. He's sort of presenting the project in under a kind of slogan, Boisian slogan, like socially responsible art. Under this heading. So this was going on. But what happened when we were there was that the local textile university invited we got invited by them, and Gera came there, and we understood that was the first time that happened, because the local textile university had to have the Michelangelo and his team coming, although it was next door. And afterwards, obviously, it's developed so that the textile university will ask Città dell'Arte to come in and teach, help us teach also. And then something will say, oh my God, that's how the world is. And then, now, obviously, I've heard rumors that they are establishing connection between Biella and Milan, because Biella is textile, Milan is fashion, and this is two different worlds. Still, so obviously, and then Michelangelo, of course, it's a how this Città dell'Arte works, God knows, because it's a really cobweb of a mishmash of different small sources and big sources, and fiddling around with, you know, Goethe Institute or British Council and da 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 da, and the whole tradition. But Maria Pioppi likes to do this, obviously, and they have a whole, you know. So they work with the education, the textile education. And the earlier project depended, I think, very much on the fact that Michelangelo grew up in Biella, and he has friends there, and probably they are collectors too, I imagine. And you know. But this discussion about, you know, this is reality. I mean, the hours that you will you have art, or will you have mathematics, or will you have languages, and there's a fight for about the curriculum. There's a problem too in the business education, and that is that, and that's pointed out by the Canelli Foundation report. They are referring to pedagogical research about what are the students doing in business and students in the humanities or liberal arts in America. It's very interesting, because according to these studies they refer to, the students in humanities have sort of an idea of a freedom of doing things outside the courses, extracurricular work. So they have lots of activities on campus they go to, and they're interested, and they are speaking about the courses they're taking. This, the picture of these studies came up. But the business students, they don't take it seriously. They get the diploma, and then they don't want to be bothered with that shit. Because why do they do this? I mean, they're very exaggerated. They do it because they want freedom from the economic system. they want to get in, especially in America, they want to get in and put first million, 2 million when I'm 30, and then I'm going to, you know, I'm going around the world or doing something nice. So they have a completely different kind of. It must be then very difficult to say to a business student, yes, fine, we have an art program in the evening and we can discuss, you know, discuss your textbook about marketing and the implication for the global. They have a very cynical, I think it's good that they have a cynical idea. don't take it seriously.
And that's one of the problems of this reform, that the structure of learning, this instrumental relation to learning, is generalized even over
that's
the humanities.
Right.
And this is why there were so few students when he gave his lecture yesterday.
Yes.
That is completely new for us. 3 years ago, that did not have happened. Yeah? Because they're only going to the seminars in which they are obliged to. Yeah? And for me, that's the generalization of, since I also study at an economics university, I can say that. It's the generalization of the model that I learned at this university over all these disciplines in a certain way.
Well, I was a student. I studied in a business school, and that was exactly the kind. We were partying. I don't remember. I mean, people, the old professors come up with, "Do you remember my course?" No idea. So that's what I'm saying. But then I'm trying to. Legitimize is saying this is very sound kind of attitude.
I hope this isn't too anecdotal, but I was thinking of I was at Zeppelin recently, and I must say I was very impressed by the quality of the students on the master's program, who many of whom are practicing artists.
Master of what?
It's a master's in business. Cultural management or something like that. I can't remember the exact title, but one of them is actually a dancer who's studying cultural organization modalities as they might derive from collaborative processes and improvisational dance. I mean, she's danced with the Paul Taylor Company. She's good, and she wants to come because of these constraints of the Bologna master's program. She's coming for a semester to Sussex, and it's very funny because, of course, England doesn't give a shit about Bologna, you know. But because we can squeeze through the door of Erasmus, because England is very nervous about being completely cut off from Europe, we can bring people in for a semester with no cost in these stupid high fee-paying English universities. So I feel as though there are ways of juggling with the system that are very interesting. I feel as though there are environments like the Zeppelin environment I encountered that are placing much more value on a much more holistic humanities and arts engagement with business. If I look to France, the Université Technologique de Compiègne, it's the one university in France, it's a technical university, but it has 25% of its teaching for anybody has to be in arts and humanities and philosophy. Which is why, before Stiegler started to get logorrhea, he was there, and why people like there's a very good laboratoire de cognition there. Charles Lenné, there is some really interesting research, which could only have occurred in a rich, philosophically informed, cognitive science rich environment. So I think, of course, it's overall, there's this instrumentalization, and God knows the UK is doing this. But then my strategy, naively perhaps, idealistically, is to try and look at the pockets of sanity and to see how we can create the right connections and build up something parallel. And it means playing with the system. It means playing all kinds of tricks with the system. But that's also part of art, isn't it?
And the interesting, I think, when I came across the kind of Festschrift, or I don't know what it was, from the Stillschule, and a couple of years ago, and I read this carefully, and the way in which they obviously, like most art schools, they don't want to be part of the Bologna.
They don't need to.
It's not so easy, I think, anymore.
Not anymore.
Sarat?
Yeah. Thank you. That was extremely interesting, your presentation. I wondered about this difficulty when one tries to organize things in a large institution and one tries to create interdisciplinary activity, as it were. But because it is orchestrated, as it were, by the institution itself, it seems to be just another module that people might take and forget, or the art bit, or they might do the finance bit, and it might be just forgotten, because it's simply seen to have been organized as a intellectual or academic scenario by somebody who scripted this from the top. Some well-meaning educationist who thought it would be good if there was a holistic kind of approach to education. So that itself settles down, and I'm thinking of the interdisciplinary movement of the 60s in Britain itself, in that wave of universities, which set out to be interdisciplinary, like Sussex itself, but of course get bogged down in that becoming a system of its own, and with some individuals making fantastic connections and doing brilliant work, but in the main, the logic of the system remains to departmentalize and to get people to specialize and go in the direction they want to. As a result, what I observe now across Europe is that many ad hoc and quite spontaneous organizations are sprouting up, where people have come together, particularly on this finance and art thing, on economics and art, or business and art, however we might put it, and revisiting voices, lectures on money and capital. That project I can see, we've just had a seminar on that in Berlin and in the United States, because the connections are so bizarre and so odd, because they're not institutionally, essentially not institutionally orchestrated, they're just individual. And of course, voices, conversations with the Dalai Lama, which was a PhD that I supervised at Goldsmiths in London, eventually the person went back to the United States and from the United States set up a series of further seminars looking into the very vast archives on money and the spiritual that is organized by a woman who was a sculptor but who pioneered a great deal of thinking on the subject. Laureen, I don't know if you know her, Laureen Wichers, whose archive in Amsterdam is the one that we've used now increasingly as the base for these events and for these connections and debates. So, but how does one generalize a great deal of that sort of analysis and work and research? That's the difficult part. The minute you enter an institution with that material, you get to the story you've been recounting. Lot of people will take what they want from it, but perhaps essentially want to describe themselves as business studies students and not be shaped in their broader approach by the debates that come from other angles, as it were.
But is that to do, just to kind of follow up, is that to do with the erosion of corporate identity as well? Because, you know, in the past, the way in which, you know, many of us go around and say, oh, I studied there and there with that and that professor. And the Bologna system, from the way I understand it now, it makes it really difficult to go anywhere and say, I'm studying with that person. You know, I went to Bochum because I wanted to study with Max Imnal. That was the only reason why I wanted to be there, and I accepted all sorts of other things. But what I learned in Bochum was mainly being in Max Imnal's seminars. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm also happy to have been in Bochum in that time. But I'm wondering whether the lack of identification with the institutions on all parts is creating that distancing where those reactions happen, where anything that comes from the institution can only be useful for me within my obligations, but the institution as a source of, you know, maybe cultural capital is much weaker than it was before. This is only hypothesis. I don't know.
Go on.
No, we just respond to this. And, there are ways of, at least we are trying, and all of us are doing that, trying to counteract this in various ways. We are using Facebook. We have our administrative personnel in the department are basically working with communication. Because the website never, you want to go in and look for a professor, a person who's doing something, you don't find it on the website.
Mm-hmm.
You don't find the courses. So we have to provide this in another way. But let me come back quickly to, the money thing. I mean, on the top of my head, I invite you all to come to Copenhagen and let's have a seminar on this, because this is very important. And we are at a stage now where I think, and we spoke on that earlier this morning, where the so-called STS people are providing us with empirical studies of how the financial and the money is, how money is produced and consumed, and how this is done in detail. And I've seen in the last 2-3 years a response from the finance departments in the CBS and all around the world, where they, for the first time, will listen and discuss these things, because they've come to such a sophistication analytically that actually you can go into the machine and reconstruct it and discuss what is wrong here. Is it the tires? Is it the steering wheel? Is it a gearbox? And before there was sort of general indignation about, Čiček and Badiou and ta-da and ba-bam. And that was very interesting, but the finance people never listened to that and could easily put up their bazooka and kill it, you know. But we're now at a very interesting stage. I think it's parallel to what you are doing, with talking about in the bio thing. This is very interesting.
Well, it's interesting that, I mean, the laboratory stories come from there. You know? I mean, it was bio labs mainly. So.
Hmm.
I thought that maybe the approach has to be more modest, at least the achievement or scope of what one tries to achieve has to be more modest than attempting to transform the whole syllabus in a university or in a particular department. I found, for example, the two artists from Sweden, Golden and Zenabi's analyses of meta-money and their analysis of the whole financial system through installation and performance drew such a range of participants in the event for the Gothenburg Biennale in Uddevalla that the installation itself on money and analyzing the search for the ultimate source of the meaning of money, you know, through the Cayman Islands and through Jersey, etc. And this is a whole journey across the world in the search for where is this money deposited and who actually is in charge of it. It's a most fantastic project, but it's all imagined through two artists who have a background in the Stockholm School of Business.
Mm-hmm.
But,
can you spell out the names of the artists?
Golden, Goldin, and Zenabi, Senabi.
And the project is called Meta Money?
I've called it Meta Money, but it's a whole series of money through Batai onwards. And the last project is this, the Cayman Islands. Somewhere. They never appear in it. Ultimately, the final event is a lecture from the Leicester, from Leicester University Business Department who steps onto the installation and gives a lecture on the nature of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to be sometimes those events can be more effective in setting up the climate for why one should be thinking across disciplines and through disciplines. And then beyond that, to try to squeeze out any further implications for the educational institutions seemed to me a bit difficult to make.
But we are here, I think, when we're speaking about this, these experiments and these artworks, we are facing a completely different paradigm of art, if you want, than the one that got started on the creative industries and creative economy thing. Because when you go, and that's also a problem in the problem or a challenge in the contact with business people, because they are still, many of them, thinking of art in an extremely romantic version.
Mm-hmm.
And now we are facing artists who are actually doing, I mean, Olaf or Elias was speaking, you know, I'm building reality machines. They're doing experiments, and going back to claiming that we're not interested in visions and utopia. We're working with a Barnum and machine. So it's something else. It's interesting. That's very interesting.
Does this mean that we are? Just sorry to go on.
Yeah,
so my distinction was that the universities and to some extent the art academies have become a factory for education commodities, and that this becoming the factory has meant that all sorts of smaller resistances are emerging elsewhere, which see the educational the activity of education as being just really the educational event, which might be a very transient event. It's not sustained, it's not developed. It's really like the model of Occupy the City or something.
Mm.
And if you look at the university tent set up outside St. Paul's in London, the university tent is really a very interesting example of this transient or self-raising, self-erasing institution that rises up and dissolves, really. That's the closest I've come to analyze and describe how these resistances to the universities and academies becoming factories, in which one is only concerned about whether one has got the right collection of modules that would get one onto the next step in education for jobs, as it were, what I call education for jobs. So maybe there is the split taking place. Is it a good one? I don't know. Does it leave the university system more clearly identified now as becoming increasingly self-perpetuating, but more and more sterile in many ways, however interesting the attempts might be to connect all sorts of things within that system?
But we've got what we've got and we have to deal with it. Find the cracks.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, pragmatically also. To come back to this question of the erosion of corporate identity, and like you, I went to Paris 3 because I wanted to work with Bernadotte, and then I wanted to work with Denis Babelet. But now I think students will, if we put out the right carriers of meaning, to use Merkmal, then students will go to places where they perceive value inherent to the networks that those places are platforms for. And I would suggest that in trying to develop links with universities or with individuals, actually, rather than institutions, whose values I share in terms of research integrity, in terms of conceptual originality and rigor, then I know that the seminar networks, the exchanges, the events, invitations are going to be what mobilize students, whether it's in the direction of my institution or of another institution that has those similar values. So I sort of feel as though the individuals are identifiable to a certain degree, but everybody knows that the individuals are mobile. and that mobile individuals means networks, and students are going to gravitate towards Newcastle or Sussex or Goldsmiths because they know that there are certain qualities of networks that they're going to be able to tap into. I don't think we should ignore that. And those networks often correspond, as you're saying, Sarat, to events that are extracurricular. Mm. I'm also a bit concerned about the module curriculum mechanistic approach is, of course, condemnable, but we are all also, to a certain degree, responsible. We are devising the modules. We are sitting in university executives and saying this is what's needed, whether or not we succeed. And so I think we need to... I'm always very concerned about the them and us opposition, because I don't think it makes
them and us.
I don't think it allows us to move forwards. I like to mix the cards, so sometimes I'm them and sometimes I'm us, and I think we have to move across those boundaries all the time.
I think there's a great difference between countries, because in Germany it was completely enforced, this new system, because they wanted a fundamental change of the system. It was enforced by the administration part of the university field, by the rectors and people like that. And of course, a minority cooperated, but we can't say that that was our choice.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a big difference, because in the UK, not much has changed, I think, since this Bologna process in Europe. It's more or less perhaps the same, besides these fees, which are rising. But here it's a completely changed system. According to logic, which is, in my view, more logic of social science education and perhaps natural science education, but not the tradition of the humanities education. And they lose very much. It's really... Even if our residents are liking the humanities, which is rare, we have lost very much because of this enforced reform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Responsibility partly also due to the humanities. I don't know about the situation in Germany, but that's a discussion in Scandinavia. Where has the humanities been doing? Mm-hmm.
For me, it's a power game. The other disciplines have more power. It's a struggle between different kinds of capital in the universities. The disciplines which are backed in the economic field are more powerful than the other ones, and they are marginalizing these disciplines. From my point of view, that is what's going on. They're not commercially valid and things like that, and thus they are marginalized. I don't see that the people are responsible themselves, so that I can't see that.
Yeah.
But I think being at Leuphana University is a special case. I came here before it was named Leuphana. That's why I came, and I wouldn't be here perhaps now normally. And it is a model university for Bologna. It was before the new president arrived. So this university tried to start the Bologna processes really in front of everybody in Germany, being the first ones. They made bachelors. And then arrived the new president and said, no, we do our Leuphana bachelor. They changed it, and we had new bachelors. And all the time you have struggled at this university about Bologna. We did a project, the students, to have a discussion about it and to arrive awareness that we should have some resistance, professors, students, everybody, against this things that are happening here at Leuphana. But we couldn't connect. There are nearly no professors at our lectures, where we invited guests from all over Germany to talk about what is Bologna, who does it, why, all these things to discuss, to get some knowledge, and then to act. Yeah, that was the idea. And I guess that is a problem. We are not many people here. We are really doing not all the same. There are many different departments, like automatization technique, over in Vollersaal, in another campus, of course, there's a problem, yeah.
Mm.
But why didn't we react? Yeah. That's a shame, yeah, we should. It's not that we didn't decide with Bologna, but we didn't react.
Well,
and now you have all the paradoxical effects. That's also funny, because the aims of these reforms are completely different than the results, I think. Yeah. Even regarding mobility, it was said you have to raise mobility. What's the case? The mobility is lower. Yeah? You can't even change from here to a university 50 kilometers from here, because the system is completely different. Yeah? That's very funny.
Come to Copenhagen.